Well, good morning. Iowans are a pretty hearty bunch to have so many people show up for this press conference in the snowstorm. So thank you all for joining us. Today, the Lieutenant Governor and I, along with the Iowa Commission on Volunteer Service, are pleased to be joined by representatives from state government, the private sector, and higher education to announce the signing of Executive Order 84, creating the Governor's Council on National Service in Iowa. Service has been important to me throughout my years in office and, frankly, throughout my entire life. It was the subject of my first and my most recent inaugural address, and we are excited to be here today to be the first state in the country to launch a public-private effort to expand national service. The Council will come up with innovative ways to leverage the skills of citizens and, in doing so, make community service a priority. Last November, I was approached by John Bridgeland, former Chief Domestic Policy Advisor for President George W. Bush, who is co-chair of a national initiative called the Franklin Project. We have a representative from the Franklin Project with us today, Tess Mason Elder. With copies of the Franklin Project Plan of Action outlining the goal to engage 1 million young Americans in service to their country through the national service. I share in the belief stated by the Franklin Project that it is critical to engage more people in service to our state and our nation. Good things happen when citizens take the initiative to engage in their communities, so I pledge our support for the Franklin Project and to be a model for other states. Increased service will pay dividends immediately, and civic engagement will lead to greater ownership and pride in our communities. One such example is AmeriCorps' NCCC from Vinton, Iowa, and I think we have representatives here from that today. We're pleased to be joined this morning by members of AmeriCorps NCCC. AmeriCorps' NCCC partner with FEMA to provide direct services at a lower cost following disasters. They've added 240 rapid response corps members that prevent FEMA from having to deploy more costly reservists. FEMA Corps has projected to save the taxpayers $60 million annually. However, in just its first year, they've already exceeded that projection, saving taxpayers $80 million. That is the kind of action that we think makes a lot of sense. And now I'd like to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and the other speakers.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. And volunteerism and community service is a priority of this administration. Already, Iowa ranks in the top five for volunteering by the Corporation for Community Service, and five cities, Iowa City, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Davenport, and Waterloo, rank in the top 25 for mid-sized cities. Now more than ever, we have an opportunity to engage Iowa's spirit of service to improve the lives and communities while helping individuals develop skills that will enable them to prepare for long-term careers and build a pipeline to employment. The Governor's Council on National Service shall make recommendations on how to expand volunteer opportunities and national service for Iowans to more efficiently and effectively carry out the work of government. It also will engage a new generation of Iowans by fostering a sense of ownership in our country that our founders envisioned. The Council will work with state agencies to explore how national service can advance their strategic priorities as well as their missions. Community service is a cost-efficient way to expand the services that are already provided by government, with an average return of $4 for every dollar invested. However, we know that it's going to take some time and policy effort to unlock this tool for the state entities. We also will look to private entities in Iowa's colleges and universities in partnership with the Iowa Campus Compact to explore what this could look like right here in Iowa. The Governor's Council on National Service will complement the national initiative, the Franklin Project. General Stanley McChrystal, a former commander of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan, has been leading the charge as chair of the Franklin Project Leadership Council. The Franklin Project will also be working on a national online technology platform with private sector partners and the U.S. Conference on Citizenship. They are creating a national service certification system and pushing for increases in the number of one-year national service opportunities. We will look to this council to work with the Franklin Project to help structure how these activities will work for Iowa. And now we're going to hear about a few of those examples of this initiative that are currently underway, and I'm pleased to introduce and bring to the podium Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Colonel King. Colonel King?
Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Well, it's a pleasure to be here at the very roots of a program that's be very dynamic and will provide all of us an opportunity to give back to something a lot bigger than ourselves. You know, speaking from the veterans community, service to our country is what we are. Personally, in 1968, I raised my right hand and said I'd stay for 6 years, and I stayed for 36 years. And then a few months ago, the phone rang, and I volunteered to come back to work again, and I'm really glad that I did. Service to our country is something that few Americans have an opportunity to do, and just from the military side, if everybody who wanted to join the military, of them, only a third of them would be able, one in three would be able to meet the qualifications for enlistment and take an oath. The Corporation for National and Community Service reports that they have seven times as many applications as there are national service projects, so there's plenty of things out there that we can do. We can step up and help our communities and reach back into our roots of volunteerism, which the state, as the Lieutenant Governor noted, is one of the leaders in the nation, and give of ourselves to make our communities a lot better for everybody in them. I'll give you a little example of a prior service sailor. Jake Blitch lives in Old Wine. I've met Jake, but he didn't know it. We wouldn't put the whole thing back together again. Happenstance meeting. Jack's a Vietnam veteran. He retired as a union member. He's a past city councilman, past school board member, recently completed a 2-year tour as his American Legion post commander. He's got a baseball cap that he wears that says Navy veteran, still serving America. And to Jack, that's just a way of life. He's recently stepped up his community activities in his retirement to help give more back and make a bigger investment in his community. So in addition to working with the Legion, the Knights of Columbus, the Chamber, the local Veterans Park, he's a mentor with RSVP, which is a senior corps program. On Tuesdays, Jake goes to Sacred Heart School in Old Wine, and that's his mentoring day. So he splits his time between second and fourth grade classes, helping with reading, math, spelling. It doesn't make any difference to Jake. He's there. He feels good about what he's doing, and he's making a difference in his community. And now students that he has had through the years are coming back to him and saying, Jake, thanks for what you did for me. So it comes back around to us. And Jake's story isn't unique at all. Community service instills values in us. It makes us better people. And, you know, giving back and being part of community service, you know, the governor is an absolute supreme example for all that he's given to this state. Volunteers are not new to the state and our communities. You know, every year we have the Governor's Awards program, and we recognize dozens of them that are recognized by the state departments, but at the same time there's many, many more that give thousands of hours of commitment to their communities. The Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs is excited to be a partner with the Iowa Commission of Volunteer Service to explore opportunities on how national service can expand our mission to stand as a voice for an advocate for our veterans and our families. We'll be working with other state agencies and members of the communities to put these practices in place. And we'll be working to develop a new national service AmeriCorps VISTA program and help returning veterans find quality employment and welcoming communities when they come home. This is all about invigorating a sense of responsibility and contribution. It's about connecting with our communities and our nation, and it's about coming together in service for others. And someday, quite honestly, as this matures, people might greet each other by saying, where did you serve? You know, these young ladies back here say, Vinton. It's kind of like the soldiers that come back off the airplane from a combat duty and they got a patch on their right shoulder that says they did service in a combat zone. So maybe we'll get to that someday, I hope so. Anyway, it's my pleasure to introduce Tina Yoder. She is the Energy Efficiency Manager of Mid-America Energy, and she will tell us about Save Some Green Neighborhood Initiative, a pilot in partnership with the National Service Program, Green Iowa AmeriCorps. Tina?
Thank you, Colonel King. Mid-American has seen firsthand the power of national service organizations in bringing together the public and private sectors to meet community needs in regards to improving energy efficiency. Mid-American continues to look for opportunities on how we can use national organizations to educate and spread the word about energy efficiency, which brought about our Save Some Green Neighborhood Initiative. Mid-American Save Some Green Neighborhood Initiative was a pilot initiated and launched in 2013 in coordination with the City of Des Moines, the Center on Sustainable Communities, and Green Isle AmeriCorps. It was established to create awareness on energy usage and residential energy efficiency programs to homeowners living in Beaverdale, Lower Beaver, and Gray Lakes neighborhoods in Des Moines. With me today, I'd like to recognize Siobhan Spain with the Center on Sustainable Communities, who has been a great partner with this initiative. We also have with us several of our Green Iowa coordinators, including Aaron Howen, Haley Cannon, Stephanie Eisner, and Jessica Langner. And I'd also like to recognize Rob Buchanan with Alliant Energy. Alliant Energy will be working to fund a pilot program with Green AmeriCorps in 2014 and 15 as well. The five Green Iowa coordinators that are here today assist Mid-American in helping to spread awareness in regards to energy saving strategies and education about the residential energy efficiency programs available to the homeowners in these neighborhoods, and as well as the rest of the communities served by Mid-American Energy. In addition to educating customers about these residential energy efficiency programs, such as Home Check, our Home Check audits, and also the installation component of our Home Check audit, they also are out in the community at various events spreading the word about how to save energy and money. In 2013, Mid-American Energy performed 4,823 residential home check audits in the state of Iowa. The Green Isle AmeriCorps volunteers will be assisting homeowners in our three pilot neighborhoods who received one of these audits in creating an action plan on how to implement the recommendations identified by auditors. Energy efficiency, benefits both the environment and the communities. Lower energy bills are good for the environment, and they help increase the value of property and the neighborhoods. And we really appreciate this partnership that we've had with Green Isle AmeriCorps, and we hope to continue this partnership with them, as well as the City of Des Moines and the Center on Sustainable Communities, in 2014 as we look for additional opportunities. I am pleased to announce Shannon Cofield, a special counsel to the President for Strategic Partnerships at Drake University.
Good morning. Drake University's mission is to provide an exceptional learning environment that prepares students for meaningful personal lives, professional accomplishments, and responsible global citizenship. We've been participating in a national higher education working group with the Franklin Project to explore best practices for higher education in developing national service opportunities. Drake has a deep commitment to service learning and community service. 80% of our students have a service or service learning experience by the time that they graduate, and 70% of our faculty and staff are engaged in the community by serving on boards, actively volunteering, and supporting professional associations. Drake has already seen the benefits of students participating in national service programs like AmeriCorps. Through the Iowa Campus Compact, Iowa College AmeriCorps program, which increases volunteerism among college students in Iowa as part of their academic experience. In the 2012 and 13 academic year, Iowa College AmeriCorps program members served 45,350 hours, providing a value of over $1.3 million in services to nonprofits. While the student AmeriCorps members developed skills and completed 300 service projects for the community, the students earned a total of $150,000 in education awards to pay for college. Drake has also developed a public-private partnership between the Des Moines Public Schools, the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines, and the Principal Financial Group called the STEM Pathway Initiative, matching Drake students to service mentors with low-income public Des Moines Public School students to create, a pipeline to higher education and high-demand occupations. We want all students to know that they can dream about going to Drake. The STEM Pathway Initiative will include engaging National Service members, including an AmeriCorps Vista and Iowa College AmeriCorps members. Drake looks forward to working with the Iowa Commission on Volunteer Service to explore the development of a National Service program and encourages other colleges in Iowa and universities to do the same. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're excited to have this public-private partnership and for Iowa to be the first state to take this step for national service. We will receive a preliminary report, I think, in the summer with the idea that the work would be completed and we'd have a final report and recommendations before the 1st of February. Be glad to respond to your questions for any of us. Have questions on this? Well, once we have received this report by early next year, then we'll be in a situation to decide whether the state should provide additional resources. I think the great thing about this, and one of the first things I did when I became governor in 1983, I started the Governor's Volunteer Awards, and we've been doing that every year since 1983, and it's a great way to honor and recognize people that give so much of their time, talent, and resources to help other people. And Iowa has just a lot of people like that. Colonel King has been the MC at many of those events. And I've always been, the Lieutenant Governor and I present those awards, and we're very proud to see the amount of participation. We think this next step, working with this Franklin Project and with this national effort, positions Iowa to be a real leader, and others will copy us. We will work on this in a thoughtful, systematic way as a public-private partnership, receive the preliminary report next summer, and then have the final report in time to take action in 2015. Other questions? Okay.
Thank you
very much. We'll be glad to respond to questions on other subjects as well this morning. Yes.
Governor, you're probably aware of the Attorney General of the United States last week raised a very serious question. He was critical of 11 states. He included Iowa and talked about, said he expressed concern about disenfranchisement of black voters. Can you talk about that? And also, correct me if I'm wrong, but do you have any black department heads? Do you have any blacks in positions on your own staff?
Well, first of all, I would say I'm really proud of the record that we've had of appointing minorities to key positions, whether it's serving on boards or commissions or on my staff. You may recall Elmo Hawkins served on my staff for many years and then also served as a department head. We try to choose the very best people, but also while I was at Des Moines University, we started the Glanton Scholarship for minority students, which now is an endowed scholarship of more than $1.4 billion. I'm disappointed that the Attorney General of the United States, who also was involved in that Fast and Furious project to give guns to drug smugglers in Mexico, would criticize Iowa without even knowing the Iowa Constitution. I think the Iowa Constitution makes it very clear. If you commit an infamous crime, which is considered a felony, you lose your rights. That includes your right to vote, run for public office, or possess firearms. Those rights can only be regained by executive action of the governor. And I learned a long time ago from a great eighth grade teacher named Lyra Seawick that as American citizens, we have certain rights guaranteed by the Constitution. But with that needs to go respect for other people and their rights and responsibility of being an honest and good citizen. So if you commit an infamous crime and lose your rights, you could earn them back by paying your price to society, which means serving your time, paying your fine and court costs, and now the forgotten people in the criminal justice system are often the victims. In some cases, courts will require the perpetrator to make restitution to the victim. We require that that individual be current on making their restitution in order to get their rights back. I have not denied a restoration of rights to anybody that has met that criteria. And I think that's a very fair and balanced way. At least somebody that commits an infamous crime such as a felony ought to pay the court costs and the fine associated with that crime before they expect to get their rights restored. Right.
Over the years have not really been out front on having preschool.
Oh yeah, I made a significant recommendation which would have focused the resources on making sure that all people with financial need got that many people have been paying for previously, but the Democrats in the legislature weren't willing to do that. So we reached the compromise that's in place today, and Iowa is one of the states that provides the most resources in support of preschool education. The problem is we don't target it to the most needy. We just give it out on a formula basis to the school districts. And that is one of the challenges that we have, but that was what we could work out with the present makeup of the legislature.
And how do you feel about the Democrats bill in the Senate right now to put significantly more resources?
That's the problem. They're wanting to spend more money but not focus it on the kids that have the greatest needs that aren't getting the service. If they're willing to work on and focus on really providing help to those kids that aren't getting preschool, I'm very willing to work with them, but that's never been their position. They just want to spend more money, and that obviously we have, I think, about $68 million in the budget for preschool, for 4-year-old preschool. So you hear that $66 million this year, in next year's budget it's nearly 70. Unconstitutional.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, it's unconstitutional. Even your paper recognizes that.
Governor,
yeah, go ahead.
Is it correct that you have no blacks as department heads? There is no blacks who are members of your own staff? Is that accurate to say?
Well, as I said, I have had a number of people in the governor's security detail on my staff as department heads, of people that I've appointed to boards and commissions, and I've had a particular effort to recognize minorities, as I did when I was a president of Des Moines University with the Glanton Scholarship. So
you don't have any black.
Not presently,
okay.
Not presently, but you know, I did appoint one that didn't get confirmed.
Okay. And just as a follow-up on that,
I can't help the Senate Democrats rejected him, but I did appoint one. Actually, we have been working on that, and I did. I meet regularly with the NAACP, and I put them in touch. I called the Chief Justice and asked the Chief Justice if he would meet with them. He has a working group that's been working with him, and in our last meeting, they were very complimentary of the Chief Justice and the work that he's been doing with them to try to address that issue. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Mark Cady, the Iowa Chief Justice. Yeah, I called Mark Cady and told him that I met regularly with the NAACP, and they had a concern about this. And this is really an issue that involves prosecution and sentencing. It's really not an issue that it directly affects the executive branch of government so much as it does the judicial. But he agreed to meet with them, and they've had, I think, more than one meeting. And at least in our last meeting, they were very complimentary.
They were happy with the progress
of the
that
work
was being
that's
made.
Being done.
Yep.
Are you going to insist on private placement for teenagers that are in the juvenile court system? There's now a backing away in the Senate of insisting that Eldora be reopened.
You mean Toledo. First of all, I'm pleased that they have recognized that they shouldn't be focusing on the institution. The focus needs to be on providing the best treatment and the best education for the kids. That was denied them at Toledo. And the first of all, Department of Education has said there's 117 children were denied their education. We have money on the budget to provide remedial education for those kids. And we want to make sure, and they, by the way, they also were placing boys and girls in children in need of assistance and delinquent girls in the same facility. That doesn't make sense, and that's why it doesn't make sense to reopen that institution. Instead, what we've said is we need to place the kids where they can get the best services. Those should be in accredited institutions where they get the treatment and the education they deserve. And from my meetings with Disability Rights Iowa, I understand that's being done. With regard to delinquent girls, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. I think we ought to look at their individual needs and find their correct placement for them that meets their needs in terms of treatment and education. Well, that's where I think, let me just say, that's the mistake. We should never say to kids, this is your last resort, this is the maximum security facility for you. Instead, we ought to say, we are placing you in a place where we think you can get the support and help you need to turn your life around. So I think philosophically, we need to go away from this corrections mentality and instead go to a idea of how we can provide the best treatment, support, and to help these kids that are troubled, that need assistance.
Disability Rights Iowa pronounced the latest incarnation of what's being discussed a step in the right direction.
Well, let me just say, the most important thing is that we focus on the needs of the children. That has been my focus from the beginning. That's the reason why I met with Disability Rights Iowa. That's why I signed the executive order to stop the excessive use of solitary confinement for children. And we found out that was still going on even after the report of the task force was made. That's the reason why we made the decision to move forward with alternative placements in accredited facilities that would provide the treatment and education needed. I want to continue to focus on the needs of the children. Well, I think that their efforts to interfere with the decisions of providing the best treatment for children have not been correct. I'm glad they backed off their insistence on reopening the institution. But I believe that we still need to keep the focus on the needs of the children. That has been our focus from the very beginning, and I will continue to work with Disability Rights Iowa, with Jerry Foxhoven and the task force, and with the juvenile court and the Department of Human Services to come up with the very best alternatives for each child. And I don't think it has to be a particular institution or one size fits all. I think it could be a combination of things, but it should be, the overriding thing should be, what is the best placement for this child so that they get the treatment that they need to turn their life around and so that they get the education that they have a right to receive?
Jason Kaplan takes on. Final week legislature, you satisfied with where your agenda stands and working on it?
For the most part, yes. I think the legislature is making significant progress. We're pleased with the response that we received to the condition of the state address and with the movement of our priorities. We have, as you know, a very focused agenda. The centerpiece is our home base, Iowa, and it appears that virtually all parts of that are moving forward. Also, our broadband initiative, I think, is making good progress. The anti-bullying legislation, the program that we have to provide apprenticeship training, I think has received broad bipartisan support, and also the initiative to rehabilitate abandoned public buildings to be used for commercial purposes. So those are our priorities, and I think progress is being made on all of them. I'm hopeful we can have another successful session like we did last year. As you know, these big issues tend not to be resolved until the final days of the legislative session, and it takes patience and perseverance to see it through. We intend to do that again this year. No, I support the direction House Republicans are going. I would point out when the Democrats had the governorship and the legislature, they didn't follow that precedent. They did not set allowable growth in those days. And then they underfunded education. And then, remember, Culver cut 10% across the board, which was devastating to schools and to property taxpayers. I don't want to go back to those bad old days. I don't want to make unrealistic promises that can't be fulfilled. I would point out we intend to continue on the path of fiscal responsibility with two-year budgets and five-year projections. We passed last year comprehensive education reform that's going to provide, and this is all state dollars, not property tax increases like allowable growth provided, 100% state funding for 4% growth for the coming school year. And we intend next year, when we address the budget, to put together a biennial budget. I intend to present it on the second day of the legislative session, which would be in January, with adequate time to address funding for the next two fiscal years. And I want to do it in a way that we are assured fits with the additional commitments we've already made on the teacher leadership program and to property tax relief in this state. And we can meet those obligations, but we can't promise the moon and put together unrealistic expectations that can't be fulfilled. And I think schools appreciate having stability and predictability, and we're going to keep that.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you.
Thank you.